Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we will spend some time looking back at an NC State win, try to make as much sense of that as possible, have a little bit of a macro discussion as to the season overall, and try to revisit recruiting and have a brief kind of national recruiting picture, particularly since seasons have played out. It looks as though some coaching staffs have either lost significant momentum or will in fact lose their job, and we'll just have a brief discussion as to how that ripples throughout the college football world. But as we start off every week, want to thank the fine people at Louisiana Hot Sauce for making this possible. I can tell you that as of this morning, I finished my my first 12-ounce bottle of Louisiana Hot Sauce on two fried eggs, and it was fantastic as always. We had some Twitter feedback, always appreciative. Last night, heard from MJ. MJ's been a listener of ours for probably since the first podcast we ever put out. And I don't think he was just doing this with the Florida State angle per se, but praised Louisiana Hot Sauce, particularly on Gator Tail, fried Gator Tail. So a little bit of perhaps greater diversity than I had suggested previously.
Absolutely, dude. There is a there's a lot of diversity and ability in Louisiana Hot Sauce, and you know you got it's like Florida State's receivers. It's got talent. You just got to use it. You can't be afraid to throw it on there, right? You don't want to wait for the perfect opportunity, because every opportunity could be a good opportunity, and you got to strike that right balance of when to use it. And the right balance for when to use Louisiana Hot Sauce is all the time.
You don't go wrong. Absolutely. Incredibly economical, great flavor, one drop, two drop. You're not going to ruin a meal, but you don't have to worry about over-spicing anything. But it's a great addition to any meal, and it has been a great addition and a great supplemental force to this podcast, and we thank them as always for their partnership. Bud, Florida State went to Raleigh, a place that historically has never been too kind to it. Got a win, never a win that we will look back on in two or three years and discuss the beautiful football that we watched or kind of yearn for a performance like that out of Florida State again. But as you so aptly said in the instant reaction, ugly wins sure as hell beat pretty losses. And for a team that right now is just kind of scratching and fighting its way through every game, I don't want to be too negative anytime you go on the road and get a win.
So, I mean, you could be really negative, and that's the macro conversation, right? That's where a lot of fans yesterday got very angry on social media. Our Facebook feedback and Twitter feedback was pretty vitriolic about Jimbo Fisher saying that people don't appreciate 9, 10, 11 win seasons. That was in his press conference yesterday. You know, that's interesting. And he said it within a context of the playoff is forcing this, which I thought was perhaps somewhat true, because I do think that if you're having this season in a BCS era, people are still angry, but perhaps not quite as angry, because in the playoff, you have four spots, right, to make it. And in the BCS, you only had two. So now it seems like, okay, there's increased access to play for a national title. And this team to not even be in discussion, and really not even be in discussion after, you know, the first month of the season to make the playoff, I think gets people angrier than they would be back in the BCS era, because in the BCS era, basically you realize that, you know, one loss was often fatal. So should fans appreciate a 9 or 10 win season? Well, they're not going to win 10 games in the regular season, you'd have to count the bowl game to get there this year. I don't think they should appreciate a 9-win season. I don't think it's very hard to go 9-3 at Florida State. This is a little more macro than I think we were gonna start off here, but it was kind of fresh in my mind hearing Jimbo Fisher say that. And you can't hype your team like he did all throughout the preseason,
right?
And yeah, then throw that out.
That's a critical tie for me. Yeah, mm-hmm. You can't. There are teams, and there are times when I think a fan base would appreciate a 9-win season. Now this it's not going to be all that frequent, but it does exist.
It happened last year, man. I mean, don't you think people appreciated last year as a rebuilding season, a legitimate rebuilding season, despite the fact that Jimbo Fisher didn't want to use those terms. He used basically every other possible term, and everybody knew it. This year is not a rebuilding year.
Yeah, understood it and were willing to accept it. Not the case this year. Not the case when you talk about the team the way you do, and not the case when you have the roster that you do. And I particularly have a problem. I agree with your point. The field is a little bit larger, where you're looking at two entries versus four now. So there is a slightly more, there is a little bit more room for error, and as such, a greater dissatisfaction when you don't make it in. But if this was 1997 and Florida State had the type of roster that it did, and it was looking at a 9-3 season and it going to the Tangerine Bowl or the Outback Bowl or whatever it is, this fan base would be wildly disappointed and frustrated. So, the playoff, I feel like a lot of people blame a lot of things on the playoff. I don't know that fans being a little disgruntled with this season has much to do with the playoff at all.
I'm telling you, Jimbo Fisher needs to drop that idea that people need to appreciate 9-win seasons. That is not an accomplishment at Florida State. That is, stick any coach in America at Florida State, absent like an 80-year-old type coach, and he can go 9-3 at FSU. It's not hard. You just get a certain baseline level of talent, and in college football, talent's the most important thing. It's not hard to get a 9-3 level of talent at Florida State, and I think that is so revealing of the poor coaching job done by this staff this year. So, to the game, another slow start on offense.
Never.
No points in the first quarter.
Made me look like a real jackwagon. Again, I'm trying to keep it PG, but for suggesting that they would score in the first quarter again, nope, no such thing. I was dumb, naive, perhaps, to even suggest or hope for such a thing. That just appears to be what we're going to do. Now, maybe we'll score against Boston College or something here. But
do you have any new theories as to why this is? I really, like, a lot of times we have good theories on why things happen, but I'm kind of stumped as to why they're so damn bad early in games.
I'm stumped, but I will say that there's times where I have to go back and look at the film, look at the tape. Occasionally we'll get our hands on an All-22 to have an appreciation for who played well, who didn't. The DeAndre Francois at the beginning of that game was that's as rough of a product as I've seen from him. So,
yeah,
it's tied to the quarterback position, obviously. I mean, anything you do in college football is going to be tied to the quarterback position. But as far as the overall, like, no, I don't know what it is other than a deep underlying cultural problem that has existed here for a little while. And it's not doesn't seem to be changing, unfortunately.
Yeah, I tweeted during the game. I said, if Francois is going to be this inaccurate, I tweeted that during the first quarter, Florida State could lose every game left on his schedule, like potentially. Not that they would, but
he was the guy who's occupied the quarterback spot for 2 years previous at Florida inaccurate. I mean, it was just throws that were nowhere. I mean, not just like
bouncing them to receivers,
missing
way over
front
their
shoulder,
heads.
Back shoulder, just putting it in, the third row. Yeah, he was as off as I've seen him. Now he responded.
Do we have a term for this? Like, do we have a term for throws that are just outside the catch radius? Like, there's no possible way that even with a strong, diving effort, you're going to get it. Is it non-competitive throws? Is it no chance throws?
Yeah, something to that end. You're probably better at slapping a term on it. But
I know in baseball, like if you throw one, it's so far out the strike zone that you just can't possibly induce a swing from the hitter. They call it a non-competitive pitch. Maybe no chance throws is better because it does show that the receiver has no chance to catch it. There were way too many of those early on in this game. That's probably the reason for the slow start. I do wonder, Fisher teaches sort of level-headedness so much, right? And hey, keep your emotions in check. There will be ebbs and flows in the game. And he does, to his credit, do a great job of getting his teams to do that. I wonder if sort of if they're just not necessarily as fired up sometimes coming out of the locker room. Maybe I'm wrong on that. And I don't know that you want to sacrifice that entirely. But I don't know why they're so damn bad coming out for the first half. But it's consistent. Mm-hmm. They're terrible.
They are nothing if not consistent when it comes to that. You're absolutely right. And it's, it's not really worth banging your head on the table anymore. It's just the fact. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, more or less the entirety of the season. And it's not a problem that's completely tied to this year either. So I don't know what it is as far as when we look at micro for their problems on Saturday. Francois had a large part to play with it, in my opinion. Like I said, he certainly rebounded, had a much better game later on, and situationally made some significant throws for you. But they were just exactly what they have been on offense coming out of the gate. And when you ask for a larger macro question or a larger macro answer to that, unfortunately, I don't have it, and I don't know that that many people have an answer for it. Otherwise, I would think they would have done something for it. But that's
and part of it's on the defense too, because typically the result that the defense is giving this offense, because the FSU usually defers if they win. So the defensive result that is being produced quite typically here has been either touchdown, which means then you're getting the ball on a kickoff, so your field position is probably going to be around the 25, which is not great. Or you might be even pinned deeper because the opposing offense has managed to drive a couple, couple first mm-hmm. downs, and then they punch you deep. Or in this game, I believe you had your first drive started like the 9 or something, where McFadden made that interception. Right. So they really have had poor field position, especially early on in game. So as much as I want to put this entirely on the offense, you have to consider the whole picture here. Not fully buying the excuse that Jimbo gives. However, they have moved the ball some in first quarters of games and just not managed to score touchdowns. Now, that's a huge issue, but I don't want to ignore that they have definitely moved it some.
Okay, we will not ignore that, and we'll note that, and hope to be able to have a more complete idea as to what's going on, why it's going on, and hopefully be able to juxtapose some success in the final third of the season in the first quarter and see if anything about that changes. Again, not a whole lot of optimism, but Friday night against a BC opponent, if it were going to change, you would have to think that would be one of the games in which it's possible. But let's just delve into the NC State game and give kind of sole focus there for 10 minutes or so, and just what stood out. I know you and I had a brief back and forth as far as the our opinion of the officiating. I know that's top of mind with a lot of the fan base. I don't think necessarily that let me see how I can say this. I certainly do think there's some, probably, in my opinion, some carryover from Fisher's comments. I don't know that you see them played out in like the targeting call or even the two plays that directly led to touchdowns, and we'll talk about that. But there were some there were just some egregious holding calls, and you can call holding damn near every play, but there's some, particularly on the edge of the line of scrimmage, that are just hard to ignore. And too many times in this game, I kind of just scratched my head and
thought, hard for you to see refs ignore.
That may be a little bit of carryover from last week. So yeah, you're right. Not hard for them to ignore, and they did a damn good job of it.
So I totally agree with you. If you look at it, I think the two most explosive plays given up by the defense were a direct result of seriously blown calls that not only. Yeah, the flag could have brought the play back, but literally the play in large part happened because an illegal block was executed and sprung the guy to score. On the first one, the tight end doesn't even try to hide it. He literally extends his arms to block the defensive back there.
Yeah.
That's a blatant pick, and offensive pass interference should be called in that situation every time. It's not a judgment call. It's not even close. It's literally a pick. I mean, he blocks him.
he extends his arms. You're absolutely right about that. He also breaks down in the open field. I mean, it's not.
He doesn't got in a great blocking position.
Yeah, he doesn't even feign to be running around. He breaks down and straight pops out and just puts his arms on him, and that's not missed. And all of a sudden, number four is blocked, and number six is not about to catch him.
Now, I think that was so egregious that I have to believe, because I don't believe the game's rigged, I have to believe that the ref just didn't see that, because I don't think that's one you can ignore even if you're pissed off at Jimbo Fisher, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's pretty damn obvious. I don't know how you miss it, but I have to think that he did. On the other one, is it Hoskins that gets blocked in the back?
And you know Hoskins, he's made damn near every tackle this season, so you know he was going to go up there and stick that guy. I'm being incredibly sarcastic here, but yeah, no, Hoskins gets his ass blocked in the back pretty egregiously as well.
So, look, is NC State probably going to score on that drive? Yeah, I think so. Do they have to score on that play? Not necessarily. I mean, hell, Florida State played good red zone defense in this game. Very good red zone defense, in fact. But that's a pretty egregious block in the back, I think. And I'm sure Florida State will send that one into the ACC as well. Now, NC State had moved the ball well on that drive. They had a couple of really nice throws and catches there. And I do want to give NC State credit for that. And I did so in the Instant Reaction podcast. If y'all haven't listened to that, we do like a 20-minute instant reaction. It's unedited. I try to get it up as soon as I can after the game. They made a couple just really good throws and catches against good coverage in this game. Mm-hmm. And that was a second-half drive. And Florida State played much better defense in the second half, I thought. And this, to their credit, this staff is good at second-half adjustments, especially defensively. They're coming out of the gate adjustments not so great. But, you know, they probably score on that drive. I mean, before that, they had run, what, eight plays for 72 yards. So it's not like they weren't moving the ball. On the other drive, the first touchdown of the game is really the most egregious one. Florida State had played pretty good defense on that drive. I think they had like one missed tackle, but that's crazy. That, to me, that play that you're running that play in large part to set up a better field goal, you know, I think. And then all of a sudden you get a huge pick and boom, because that's third and 15 of the 28. So it's a 45-yard field goal and their kicker's not very good. So you throw something underneath, maybe try to get 7-8 yards and get yourself down to like the 20. Okay, then you got a 35-yard. That's your percentages are significantly better there. Instead, it's a touchdown on what's kind of a give-up play without the whole blocking a defensive back in the middle of the field deal.
I want to talk real briefly about individual performances, Bud. So I'll ask you: you want to go critical or laud praise to start this off for?
Well, I think we can do some of both. I mean, there's some guys who had drastically different first and second halves.
Mm-hmm. On the defensive side of the ball, Matthew Thomas, you gave us the great terminology for let down, look down, look ahead, let down sandwich. I struggled with that, but still very appreciative of it, and have had some laughs with the way that people have incorporated that into social media interactions with us over the past couple of days. But if scheduling gives you a let down, look ahead sandwich, what is the I'm going to try to jump underneath a block and then run over and commit a worthless personal foul. Do you have terminology for that? Because I'm pretty sure number six gave you that on one play. And
that could be the loaf lack of discipline sandwich. I literally just made that up on the fly. We did not discuss this before the show, folks.
No, we promise you we didn't, but well done, sir. Very well done. Matthew Thomas, not a game that he will want to remember. I don't want to be too critical of one individual person. And frequently, I think fan base sees Matthew Thomas chasing after somebody, and it's not necessarily always his responsibility. But that is I'm going to need better out of you, number six. I know you haven't had a chance to play a ton of football, but that is a poor performance in general. and highlighted on that one play where he tries to jump underneath a block, takes himself out of position, and then runs over and commits a entirely useless personal foul.
I think Florida State needs a new linebackers coach. I've seen about enough of this. They're
Hoskins. Hoskins is basically, I would love to see, you get points, you get graded out. What is Hoskins' production totals over the course of the season? I just don't remember that kid making any type of plays. Undoubtedly regressed, in my opinion. We were pretty optimistic on what he could turn into, and in my opinion, for good reason. There were some nice moments last year from that kid, and he has more or less been a non-factor all year. Thomas has had moments of flashing the physical skills that he has, but also wildly undisciplined at times. And yeah, the play from the linebackers has been just been particularly poor. And I know that people, seem to think higher of Miller internally than maybe you would think. He's probably a better recruiter than people give him credit for, but the results on the field is just not there. And on a staff where there may be a couple different places where changes need to be made, I'm not sure that linebacker coach is the one that sticks out to me the most.
I totally agree. Look, and Thomas had some good rushes off the edge. I'll give him credit for that. He directly affected a couple throws with blitzes, and especially one there in the red zone that forced a field goal late. I like that. A.J. Westbrook, I think first half grade is not very good. Second half, he had three pass breakups and played one. He probably played the ball about as good as we've seen a receiver play the ball or a DB play the ball this year for FSU in terms of realizing where you are in phase, watching the receiver's eyes and playing up through his hands to make a critical pass breakup there on third down. That's encouraging, man, because you need one of Westbrook and Bruton to become at least good players, right? And so that's important. You gotta have that. And that was good to see, because in the first half he definitely got picked on some. I thought Urban Lane played pretty well in this game. Tackled a little bit better for the most part than he did against Clemson. Although there's kind of one tackle along the sideline it's not really much of a tackle attempt. DeMarcus Walker created a lot of kind of disruption there in the backfield.
Was overall, held all the damn time.
Yes. Live action, I was kind of like, man, this defensive line is not doing great today. But yeah, that field was shitty. That was, man, I know they had a hurricane come through there, and they have not had the right temperatures to resod the grass. It's been sort of unseasonably cool up there or something after the hurricane, they were saying. That field looked like trash.
That's an ag school. Don't care. Need to be better.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. They usually do have good grass, don't they? Mm-hmm. I feel like. So that probably made it tough, but all the holding really made it tough on the defensive line. Some quick stats I'll run through here real quick from the NC State game. Overall, defense held them to a success rate of 39%. I'll take that all day. I don't like giving up the explosive rushes. Now, one of those was obviously on the block in the back. But NC State's rushing success rate, I think, was like, what was it, 28%, according to Bill Connolly. So on three out of every four rushes, Florida State's defense was producing a good result. On one out of every four, it was not. And it seemed like on the one out of four, when it wasn't producing a good result, it was like the run was guaranteed to go for 10-plus yards. So NC State did not have a consistent rushing game, but they did have an explosive rushing game. One thing Florida State did a really good job, though, of this game, they limited NC State's play action game on first and 10. NC State just really did not ever hit that huge explosive play over the top that they wanted to hit. They never really got that guy wide ass open against the defense. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't have any of those, oh my God, coverage busts.
You had one blown coverage that I think went for 20 yards or something. You did not
That's a good day at the office.
For this defense, that's a great day. Absolutely.
So that was interesting to me. One thing I'll give NC State credit for, they sort of zigged when Florida State zagged. After Florida State shut down their run on first downs, which it did pretty frequently, NC State actually ran the ball on like second and 10, second and 9, second and 8 very effectively to get back to more manageable down and distance. And I think that's a tip, you know, tip your cap type thing to NC State's defense. Now, FSU still gave up too many third longs. There were a lot of very good throw and catches there against pretty good coverage. But the Wolfpack did a nice job to set up some third and mediums by rushing the football on second long as opposed to going into pass mode. And that was a tendency breaker because I think Florida State expected them to go into pass mode on second and 10 as most teams would.
Let's talk a little bit about the offensive performance overall. Offensive line, probably not something that this fan base and the way that they look at that unit in particular right now is probably going to be real quick to concede, but this was probably one of the better performances that you've gotten out of that unit all season.
Absolutely was. I mean, pass blocking, I thought, was very consistent. Francois almost always had time to throw the ball. I think he was sacked one time. And I think he was also hit less in this game, right? Like, there weren't a whole lot of times where he was getting drilled, and NC State or ESPN was not able to show their montage of him just getting destroyed like they have in some previous games. Now, I'm going to give him a criticism and a compliment. The compliment is that on third and long and on times where the defense essentially knows you have to throw, where the run threat is really gone. So for the most part, you know, second and 8+, third and 5+, stuff like that. He was 11 of 18 for 169 yards, which is what, like 9.94 per attempt. That's great. And most of the drops that were suffered in this game, I think 3 of the 5, came on these throws. That's really good, man. I mean, you're talking about a 70% success rate overall. Now, most of this was on second long. On third and long, he was not as good, but part of that was the drops. Overall, man, in passing situations, to go 9-4 an attempt and 61%, I'm very happy with that. That's a nice day at the office for him. What's lacking is his throwing when the throws are easy. On first down, on second and 6 or less, on third and 4 or less, 11 of 21 for 161 yards and a sack. That's awful. Mm-hmm. You've got to complete a higher percentage of those passes, and that's where a lot of his sort of uncatchable throws happened. That, to me, is a concern. If this team is ever going to get to where it wants to be, and not this year, but in coming years, then you have to buy into this idea that DeAndre Francois can become a consistently accurate quarterback. And you've got to hope that that is something that can be coached significantly. Because he struggled with accuracy since he was in high school. And I'm impressed by him throwing with better anticipation on some of these. But the just flat-out misses are concerning.
The misses are concerning. Certainly, we'd be having probably a significantly different tenor to this whole conversation had NC State safety been able to haul in that one ball
on the final drive.
Yeah, that was a first down throw, if I remember correctly.
Can't make that. Can't be taking that chance on first down. If that's a fourth down throw and it's desperation and you're trying to fit it in there, I get it. On first down, that cannot be done. That's really bad decision making. And Florida State, if you want to say, you know, they should have lost what. They should have lost based on that. That guy should catch that football. That's a pretty tailor-made pick. Offensive line run blocking, I think, was something that surprised me. When I went back and watched this, they were actually good blocking the run. NC State, for the most part, their guys making their tackles. You know who their top two leading tacklers were?
NC State. I know the right kid had a bunch of tackles. Their defensive back. I don't know who was number two for them.
Yeah, and Sean Boone, their other safety.
Okay. The guys, so two safeties led for tackles. That's telling in and of itself. Yeah.
Right. NC State was loading up against the run. They were really trying to stop the run. Florida State did a pretty good job of blocking NC State's defensive line and linebackers. That's a really good front seven. However, when you have that many defenders that close to the line of scrimmage, it's hard to run the football because you have so many bodies there that are quickly getting to the ball carrier. Florida State just could not do a good enough job of throwing the football to create explosive plays down the field to get them out of some of those looks. And that gets back to the first down stuff. That's when you run a lot of your play action. That's when you have the opportunity to throw the ball with some of those one-on-one situations. They just didn't do it well enough. And so NC State didn't really have a reason to get out of what they were doing.
Anything else you want to comment about the offensive performance outside of Nyquan Murray? I certainly want to touch on that real briefly before we leave this unit, but anything else stand out to you?
Other than the obvious should have been pick ball, Florida State was really good in the red zone, and NC State was not, and that's kind of where you won this game, was red zone execution.
Nyquan Murray's emergence is something we'll touch on. I also want to talk about Auden Tate, not necessarily the most statistically significant performance from him, but I do like what you've seen over the past 2 weeks out of Tate, and that is he's being incorporated in the every down offense. He's being much more incorporated in the offense that exists within the 20s. So that is that to me anyway is a sign of progress and a sign of utilizing one of your unique talents, a guy that gives you a competitive advantage. Tate has emerged, has had a very solid season, has obviously had a nice number of touchdowns, but I continue to be excited by what Tate offers, and I'm optimistic to see him incorporated into the larger offense as a whole. And Murray, look, I mean, these are kind of the statistical type of numbers that we heard all summer. You know, other guys on the team would have two or three catches. Murray would have 8, 9, 10. 9 catches for 153 yards. Next closest guy on the roster caught 3 balls throughout the game. Murray has quickly emerged as your leading threat. 14 targets, 9 catches, 153 yards, 17 yards on average per catch. That is the kid that we've heard about, and for whatever reason, it's the kid that took until last week to really become a large element of this offense.
Yeah, and we spoke about this, striking the right balance between knowledge of the offense, running your routes correctly, and playmaking ability. And Florida State does, I know some people say this is not true, but it is true. Florida State does ask more of its receivers than some other offenses in terms of breaking off routes here. And they're changing your routes based on coverage, all the different splits and stuff that they want done. You know, you compare it to something like the Baylor offense. Man, if you get it, in some of these offenses, if you have a slant, you run a slant regardless. If you have, you know, and you're lining up in the same spot every time, Florida State doesn't do that. They run a more complicated offense than that. And there are pros and cons of doing so. But I do think that Jimbo Fisher failed to strike the right balance between sort of dependability of assignment and physical playmaking ability early in the season. There's no reason Nyquan Murray shouldn't be playing earlier in this year based on what we'd heard in camp. And now the on-field results show that. And Fisher, of course, I think I don't believe him when he said that Murray just matured coincidentally, right when Bo Wilson got hurt. I think he's saying that so that people don't say something like, hey, Jimbo, why in the hell was this guy on your bench as your team was losing 3 games? Right? I mean, he can say whatever he wants. I think a lot of us in the media, after he said that post-game at Clemson, chuckled pretty hard that it was just maturity.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
Yeah.
I also think that Travis Rudolph had a particularly poor game. I mean, multiple drops. If you look at it, he was targeted 9 times and had only 3 catches. So for 39 yards. On a yards per target basis, that's just 4.3. By far the worst on the team there. Murray had 10-9. Tate actually had 22-7. So 3 targets, 3 catches, 68 total yards. He also had a fumble. for and just poor ball security by him. You've got to realize they got to teach that. Like, if you're throwing the tunnel screen to him, I don't know that you're thinking that's going to break for a touchdown, right? Like, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's also maybe not the easiest to tackle. But you got to tell him, you got to kind of got to put two hands around that ball once you feel defenders around you, man. That's something they'll work on. And I thought Whitfield had a decent game. So five drops, though, from receivers is far too many on 39 passes. You can't have, you know, 1 in 8 balls dropped, especially not when the QB struggles to actually throw catchable passes anyway. That's kind of all I have for offense.
Well done on Jaquez Patrick, as somebody who frequently got to run a halfback pass when I was in my playing days. Always a great play to see. Executed really well. Great catch by Izzo as well. Just couldn't get it in bounds. Nice to see Patrick get a chance to make the most out of his one carry in the game and stick it in the end zone the next play. But just interesting to see how we're utilizing that kid right now and hopefully be able to get a little bit more out of him. But nice performance out of what we saw in general. Don't want to completely sidetrack us, Bud, or go back, but did want to get your opinion as to the targeting call that will have you playing in the first half of BC without Burns.
I guess by the letter law, it's targeting. It's kind of hard there, but you do got to protect quarterbacks. And I think that's probably the fourth or fifth most questionable call in this game.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Do you happen to see the I'm sure you were watching, particularly with your wife's allegiance, that you saw a good bit of the Alabama-LSU game as well. Juxtapose that call with the hit that Reuben Foster puts on the LSU quarterback, and tell me how one is targeting and the other is not. Now, Foster, I mean, Foster hits him in the head, leads with his head, and gets a hell of a shot in on the quarterback, to which Gary Danielson goes, "Oh, that's just SEC football," which I realize Danielson is not the person making that decision. But there does seem to be a little bit of a disparity as to what is what across conference lines. But I just think that's an unfortunate byproduct of where we're kind of taking the game right now. And I don't think Burns I don't know that there's a whole lot more that Burns could do in that situation. And that just seems to be where we're headed, where if anybody gets hit anywhere on the head, that you're going to be going out of the game. Doesn't matter if you lead with your helmet. Doesn't matter if you launch. It just looks to be kind of inconsequential, and that is frustrating to me because that just flat out a lot of times guys can't control. You don't get to slow down. You don't get to operate at 1/3 speed and twist your body in a way in which you don't make contact with people or. Everything happens so quickly. It's just a part of the game that if we're going to ask officials to officiate like that, I think we have to get used to seeing, one or two people getting thrown out a week. So a little bit of a diatribe. I realize that wasn't necessarily in line with the rest of our conversation, but did want to note it and get your opinion on it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. It's a tough call, dude. Officiating is not easy, and especially not with sort of some of the safety things they're trying to put in the game. At least you're not losing it for Florida, right? Boston College sucks, so it shouldn't really matter very much. But it does suck that he won't be able to play the first half of that game because I don't think he was intending to target the guy's head. But ultimately, I guess he does make contact with it with his abs,
like right. That's the old ab kill shot. I've heard a lot about this.
Yeah. All right. Agram, as you know, our other sponsor is Madison Social. Madison Social, the best place for great food and drink in Tallahassee. Matt and his restaurant group have been a fine sponsor of ours for several years now, and we appreciate them supporting the show. Got a cool thing to tell you all about here, and I think Matt's so... Look, it's obviously they got great food and drink, and it's right there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium in College Town. But they do a great job with events and really creating and making it more about community than just food and drink. And I think this is something pretty cool they're doing, especially if you got family. On December 10th, they're going to have a 20-foot tree setting up. They're going to decorate it, plug it in about 7 o'clock. And then they're going to shut down Madison Street and host a variety of kind of family-friendly events. Be pretty cool. Ornament decorating, cookie decorating, fake snow, face painting. Santa's going to be there. Admission is free. I'm sure if you're an adult, you can get some adult beverages as well. Always good thing to do there. And that should be a pretty good time. So good idea. Good on you, Matt. And we appreciate it. And appreciate Madison Social, their continued sponsorship of the Nolcast. All right, quick recruiting, or do you want to talk how bad Florida is?
Yeah, let's table recruiting, go into just looking at what Florida's turned into. And they've also suffered some rough injuries. Talk about losing people, losing Alex Anzalone for the year with a broken arm yesterday. It's a tough time to be a Gator fan.
Yeah, that was a costly loss at Arkansas. They lost, I think Tyree Cleveland's also out for a while. They got a couple other guys who were hobbled coming at it. Luke Del Rio, their quarterback, is not going to play against South Carolina with a shoulder injury. So, man, Florida had like 250 yards. This is like 2006 FSU offense bad. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, this is – they only had 53 plays, right, total, on 12 possessions. So that's 4.4 plays per possession, which is really bad. Their last four games, here's their yardage totals. 241, 231, 236, 523 against Missouri. Okay, mm-hmm. Missouri is a little bit different, but right. I mean, Vanderbilt, Georgia, Arkansas held them to under 250 yards. That's nuts. Mm. I mean, that to not even crack 5 yards a play in modern college football is really crazy. They were also terrible once they got inside Arkansas's 40, which wasn't too often, but they had the old 1 point per opportunity, which is... really bad. They did not score an offensive touchdown. Meanwhile, Ingram, I don't know if we talked about this. Arkansas, their defense sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, it's worse than Florida State's defense. All right. They gave up 9.16 yards of offense to Auburn. That's worse than what Louisville put on FSU.
Right.
They gave up 10.14 to Alabama. They gave up 10.02 to Texas A&M. They gave up 572 yards of offense to TCU. Dude, and then Florida comes in there and they throw up the old 241 number. That wow. You want to know what their success rate was on passing downs or obvious passing situations?
Please.
8%.
8%. Wow. Wow.
I don't know that I've ever seen something that low. That's what is that, like one out of 12?
That is crazy, and it's particularly frustrating, or it's particularly is going to sour that fan base's opinion as to what they're watching. With, you know, I mean, we talk about kind of the DNA of particular programs. I think Florida State's is more, really competitive, aggressive at times, perhaps too aggressive defense, people that want to punish you. And obviously, there's a lot of different things that Florida State's offered throughout the years. But I would say that's more or less kind of the base idea of what this defense or what this program falls back on. Florida's completely the opposite. Florida's DNA, Florida's kind of identity as a program is this offensive juggernaut, throwing the ball all over the field. And to have an offense that's performing like that, that is that's not going to sit well with that fan base. And not as though anybody is particularly pleased with what they've seen out of Gainesville so far, but how much does the conversation shift this weekend if Will Muschamp records a victory over Florida, in your opinion?
A ton. I mean, you mm-hmm. can't lose to Will Muschamp. He just fired the guy after giving him far too long. And look, part of these offensive issues are absolutely on Will Muschamp because he right. did so much better job recruiting defense than offense. I think 10 yeah. of Florida's defensive starters are actually guys that Muschamp signed.
Well, I think I was going to say, I think it's fair to point out that some of the problems are his because of his just lack of concern with offense in general. But you also have to look at some of the pieces that are still there on the defensive side of the ball because of him and what's leaving next year. That's not going to get a whole lot better for Florida.
And I think their coordinator will skip town too, by the way, mm-hmm. if he can get
that's
a job.
Something.
Because Jeff Collins is a pretty hot name out there. And if he's smart, he'll realize that defense is going to take a downturn next year with all they lose. Ingram, some more fun stats here if you got a minute.
Please.
Florida on passing downs. You want to guess what their yards per attempt was? Now, for reference, Francois had 9.4 in obvious passing situations. What do you think Florida's yards per attempt was?
4.9?
I'm going to need you to go a little bit lower.
Damn. Wow. And I thought I was really undershooting that. 4.2?
A little lower.
Wow. 3.7?
Gotta go lower.
Wow, that was really quite the performance. 3.3.
Ingram, I'm going to need you to go lower, too.
I don't even know that that's possible. Did they really go sub 3 on this?
They did.
Good. Wow. Damn, there's not often times that
1.7.
You're kidding me.
No, dude. 4 out of 9, so got the old 44% completions, but 29 yards on 9 throws.
Well,
in obvious passing downs.
That program identity, the DNA of a program, and run that through your mind again. If that's Florida's offensive performance in passing situations, damn.
Yeah, that's particularly bad. And all of a sudden, he has a shoulder injury. So, which I mean, I don't doubt entirely, but it wasn't like Arkansas's offense was that good. By the way, like they just avoided imploding. I mean, and Florida, I think Florida's deep. Do you remember back in like 2006 and like 2005? When FSU actually had a really good defense, and I think that if the offense had just been a little bit more competent, it would have produced even a better defense. Because at some point, the defense just gets so demoralized. You know?
Definitely. That's you're talking like Sims, Nicholson, Buster
yes.
Davis.
And you could tell those guys are just like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, like, man, that's what's happening to Florida's defense. I think they're realizing, oh, my God, like we could pitch a shutout. We might only win by 3. Their defense outscored their offense in this game.
I was going to point that out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. That's tough, Florida. That'll be worth watching how that plays out. And, obviously we've talked about the pattern that Miami's fallen itself into. If Florida goes and loses a couple games here at the end of the season again, strings losses together. That will be interesting to see how that fan base responds to 2 consecutive seasons where there were periods where you were playing good ball and then you kind of hit this wall and things more or less fell apart for you. So, one final crazy stat. See what we make of it, please.
Florida's rushing success rate. You want to take a crack at this?
I'm just going to let you tell since I took 4 guesses and I still wasn't particularly close on the last one.
The old 18%. So less than 1 in 5 run plays by Florida were successful. That might
quite
not get
performance.
It done.
Quite the performance. Damn.
Oh, God. This was more fun than recruiting talk. People who actually listen all the way through will probably have enjoyed this quite a bit. I'm going to finish this out. I hope you guys really enjoyed this. As always, on iTunes, 5-star rating. Please also make sure to share us on Facebook. That's how we get new listeners and entirely word of mouth is great. So very much appreciate that.